kind of get a sense that he's not sure what's going to happen next or what exactly is happening now, even. Of course, this is one of Krishna's qualities. He can certainly astonish. Everything he does is astonishing. There's one purport in the 10th canto where Srila Prabhupada writes that wherever Krishna appears, he does what is astonishing to the people of that place. So if he's in the, like in Siddhaloka, he might have to do something different than he does on earth, because on earth we become amazed by different things than they might in Siddhaloka. So he's always astonishing us. In the prayers by Queen Kunti, she lists different reasons for the Lord's descent. She says, some say you appeared for this reason, some say you appeared for that reason. And one of the reasons that she gives is, you came to rejuvenate the process of hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada explains that when Krishna comes, what he does is so extraordinary, then people talk about it. It becomes a topic of discussion, and that it's so amazing that people don't stop talking about it. Thousands of years later, we're still talking about it. So Vasudeva is certainly astonished about what's going on here. And at first it seemed that he was a little bewildered about exactly what was going on, maybe even who this person was. So now he begins to speak, and he says, now I see you directly before me, Sakshat Bhavan, I see your lordship directly before me, Vidita Asi, now I'm fully conscious of you. So this verse is a lot about the how Vasudeva now has his realization. Now he's understood what has taken place here. And as a result of that realization, he's going to offer wonderful prayers and glorification of the Supreme Lord. What we find often in his prayers, and we find throughout the Bhagavatam, that the prayers, a lot of them address the majesty and grandeur and power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will also come out here in Vasudeva's prayers. So let's look at this one, some of the things that he says here about the Lord appearing before him. First he says, now I understand that you are Purusha. Now of course the word Purusha can just mean male or it can mean human being. But Sanskrit words are understood in context. So this context, he wouldn't just say, I understand that you're a man, when he's addressing the Lord in his four-armed form as Lord Vishnu. So when he says Purusha, he means Parama Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even in the Sanskrit dictionary, different translations of the word Purusha are given there. And one of the translations is the Supreme Person. So when he says Purusha, he means you are the Supreme Purusha, the Supreme Person. And then he says, Prakriti Para. Of course, we know that Purusha and Prakriti, we speak about these things. Krishna speaks about them in Bhagavad Gita. Purusha is the person behind everything, the Ishvara, Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. Purusha is also the active agent. Prakriti is inactive, not exactly inactive, but under the control of Purusha. So, Para. Prakriti, the Purusha is para prakriti, above prakriti, the controller of prakriti. This prakriti, of course, there are two kinds of prakriti, para prakriti and apara prakriti. The inferior prakriti, or nature, or energy, we can say. Krishna, this is, of course, our philosophy, that God exists simultaneously with his energy. For the impersonalist, it's all just energy. But we understand, no, there are two. The Purusha and the Purusha's energy. So there are multifarious energies, as Prabhupada would say, this fancy word we picked up from Prabhupada. So many energies, unlimited energies, and different categories of energy. So broad categories of energy are the Prada and Aparada. Energy that is material energy and the spiritual energy or the jivas. Jiva Bhuta Mahabhaho Yayedam Dharite Jagat. And it says, of course, that this verse from Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, says that the Living entities, they're always struggling with prakriti. But they're supposed to be the superior prakriti. But they are struggling with the inferior prakriti. So why is that? Prabhupada poses this question. Why does the superior living entity struggle with the inferior material energy? And that's because the inferior material energy is being controlled by the Paramapurusha, by Krishna. A stick may be an inert piece of matter, piece of wood, and you can control it. But if it's in the hands of somebody superior to you, then you are inferior. You become inferior to that stick when it's beating on you. So the material energy may be, in principle, inferior to us because we're conscious living entities, part of Krishna's marginal potency. Right? So we're superior to that inferior energy, but still we struggle with it. We're under the control of it, actually, by Krishna's arrangement. It controls us rather than we controlling it. But that's what differentiates us from Krishna. He's Paramapurusha. We're also Purushas in a sense. But Krishna's Paramapurusha. There's an interesting verse in the prayers by the personified Vedas where they say that if Apariyami, I forget the verse, I used to know it. They say that if the living entities were the same as you, then they would never be controlled by this material energy. This verse is often quoted by the Vaishnava Acharyas. So, of course, this chapter, the prayers of the personified Vedas, very philosophical chapter. So this point is made there. So this is our position. This is Prabhupada would state this very simply. If you say that you are God, why are you being controlled by the material energy? God is never controlled by the material energy. It's His energy. So this is the understanding of the word Purusha. He's Paraprakriti. He's always in control of the material energy. So then the third line of this verse is quite interesting. It's not up there now, but the third line of this verse, which is all run together as one word, Kevalanu Bhavananda. So it's made up of four words, really. Kevala, Anubhava, Ananda, and Swarupa. So it's quite interesting that Srila Prabhupada, he translates this really in three different ways. He translates it more or less two different ways in the, or he gives related, expands it, opens it up in the word-for-word meanings, and then in the verse also, he gives a slightly different angle of view on this phrase or series of words. Kevala Anubhava Ananda Swarupa. So first, let's just look at each of the words. Kevala. Kevala means only, or one. We know Kaivalya means oneness. It also means pure, because when something is one, then it's unadulterated with anything else. Kevala Ananda Kanda. You know this phrase. Simply joyful. The path of devotional service is only joyful, it says. And also in the Harinama verse, Harinam eva kevalam, only Harinam. So kevala means only, or it can mean pure, purely. Kevala. The next word is anubhava. So anubhava means perception, or experience, or understanding. We see here that Vasudeva says, now I understand. He didn't really understand before, but he's saying, now I understand, and I'm ready to offer you prayers. So pure perception. And the next word is ananda, which of course we know. Ananda means bliss. And swarupa means form. So pure perception, bliss, form. It's amazing how Sanskrit is. The Sanskrit that we study, of course, these verses, they're written, this is poetry. So, you know, in poetry, when you write poetry, it's not necessarily written out in full grammatical form. So there's certainly some, naturally, when you're reading poetry, things tend to be compact. So So that's why when Srila Prabhupada translates things, he has to unpack them for us to understand them. So he unpacks this one in a few different ways. So the first way he translates it, he says, your form is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. So of course that's Ananda Swarupa. There are only two words, Ananda Swarup. So we know that the Purusha, Supreme Lord, Ishvara Krishna, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. His form is not only Ananda, but it's Sachit Ananda. It is pure existence. The Sat, we say eternity, is being. In other theologies, sometimes they use this term, they discuss this term, theologians. They say that God is being itself. So what is being? Being means existence, something that exists. It comes into being. So being itself, that's God. And everything else exists because of him. He's the foundational being. He's existence itself. That's God. In that sense, you could say that, well, everybody believes in God. If you believe that something exists, of course, there are those who say, well, really, nothing exists. In fact, that's more or less Shankaracharya's philosophy. There is nothing. It's not even, nothing is real. Or Brahman. Brahman is real. But what that is has no qualities, no form, no personality. It's more or less zero. That's why it's so close to Buddhist philosophy. So, but if you believe that there is something, even scientists in general, you have to believe some, you have to start somewhere when you're beginning investigation of this world. So they have a fundamental premise that something actually exists. And with the application of our intelligence, we can understand it. So we could say, well, yes, that which exists, that's God. That may be something akin to Einstein's understanding of God when he made some statements about God. His understanding of God was not two-handed Krishna holding a flute, but he had some understanding because he saw the grandeur of the creation, of existence. So that's the Sat aspect of God. Chit means knowledge, which means not only does he know everything, but his consciousness is everywhere. His awareness is everywhere. It's all pervasive. It pervades all corners of the universe, all quarters of the creation. There's nothing that's beyond his ken, beyond his grasp, his understanding. And of course, Ananda, he's always blissful. He's made of bliss. That's what he's made of. He's actually made of ecstasy. So this is Krishna, so this is Ananda Swarupa. It says that Vasudeva, he perceived that. He said, your form is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. This is something that Prabhupada took from this phrase, Kevala Anubhava Ananda Swarupa. And then he said, and whoever perceives you becomes transcendentally blissful. So here it seems that Prabhupada is tying the two words. First he tied together Ananda Swarupa. Now he's tying together Anubhava Ananda. Anubhava, you're perceived as Ananda, and also whoever perceives you, your actual form, in reality, becomes blissful. Because perceiving Krishna means a connection. You're making a connection with Krishna. Maybe you could say it's a mental connection, but any kind of connection with Krishna, there's a result from that. He's all Ananda. He's only bliss. So if you contact that bliss with your perception, with your understanding, then you also become Ananda. You touch him, you become infected by his Ananda. So then in the translation, Prabhupada says, your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge. So this is kind of another. In order to perceive that form, I was saying you become blissful by perceiving that form, which is bliss, but you have to have transcendental knowledge to perceive that form. When I was reading this just now, I was thinking, Perceive it. Well, perceive it, what does that mean? Of course, we don't see with our eyes. We don't perceive Krishna's form. We do, of course, but you have to have spiritual eyes. So can we perceive with transcendental knowledge? Does that mean with jnana you can see Krishna's Satchidananda Vigraha? No, because there are different levels of transcendental knowledge. Real transcendental knowledge means to understand our swarup, means to understand Krishna, who he actually is. Ye Krishna Tattvaveta. Se Guruha is the qualification of the guru given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Janma karma chamedyavyam evam yoveti tatvataha. You have to understand Krishna in truth. You really have to understand Krishna in bhakti, with bhakti. Any process of understanding the absolute truth, any aspect of Krishna, there has to be some tinge of bhakti. Even if you love the Brahma Jyoti, you can say, isn't that what the jnanis, don't they love the Brahma Jyoti? Isn't that why they're working so hard? Why are they struggling so hard unless there's love? Love, what is love? Love is attraction. There's a pull there. So they're being pulled by the Brahma Jyoti. Why is that? Because it's part of Krishna. And there's that in the Brahma Samhita, Pantastuko Tishatavatsara Sampragamyo, Vayavaratabhi Manaso Muni Pungavana. So Pyastiyat Prapadasimya Vichintya Tattve. Is that the third line? Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I always like that verse. It says that even if you travel at the speed of mind, the jnanis, for the travel at the speed of mind for millions of years, they'll be lucky to get a glimpse of the effulgence of Krishna's toenail. That's how hard it is to reach Krishna with your mental effort. You have to have jnana, you have to have bhakti. Your bhakti must be infused with jnana. So here it says, with transcendental knowledge, one can perceive Krishna. So this brings us to a very important point the Prabhupada makes essentially twice in his purport. He said, within his heart, affection for his son and knowledge of the Supreme Lord's transcendental nature both awakened. That's the first line. And then at the end he said, he accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection and as an object of worship by prayers. So here we see some indication of Vasudeva and Devaki's position as eternal servants of Krishna. It seems to be indicated here that there's some jnana involved. Knowledge. They know that, well, Krishna's right there in front of them in a four-armed form. Then he's going to become a little baby. So they're getting a very direct sakshat, kind of the word. They're getting a direct indication of Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the residents of Vrindavan, this is generally not there. Once in a while, there's some little hint. Maybe they start thinking, well, this person is quite unusual. He's quite powerful. Maybe he's a demigod or something. But here we see Vasudeva and Devaki. They're seeing this is God. That jnana is there. In the Vrindavan pastimes, when that jnana comes in, then it's a little bit of a disturbance, you might even say. Like when Yashoda Mayi, when she looks into Krishna's mouth and she sees the universe and she starts thinking all these philosophical thoughts, and she thinks, this is just Maya to think, I'm not this body and this is not really my son and Nandamaraj is really not my husband because these are all material conceptions. So there's a temporary, you might say, a little bit of break, then it goes away and, oh no, Krishna's my little baby. She starts taking care of Krishna, petting him and so on, loving him directly, fully. So this seems to be what's indicated here, as Prabhupada mentions twice. He understood he had within his heart both awakened affection for his son, his natural innate love for Krishna, and for his son. He's his baby. Of course, an unusual baby, the way he's appearing at the moment. But his son, his natural affection is there. Because it's for Krishna, it's transcendental affection. But there's also knowledge, there's also some understanding there that this is God himself. Of course, we also see what unfolds here as the pastime takes place, is that Vasudeva, he also more or less forgets that this is God, because what does he do then? He starts to protect him. Krishna takes the form of the little baby, and then Vasudeva is going to take him and hide him, because he thinks Kamsa's going to come and kill him. He just saw him, he's God, he's Vishnu himself, but now he's thinking Kamsa's going to come and kill him. So these kinds of contradiction and paradoxes, they take place sometimes in the consciousness of a devotee, which of course indicates the extraordinary character of the pure souls, the Mahatmas, the Mahabhagavatas. They can accommodate these kinds of contradictions which we might not be able to do. That's why they're Mahatma, broad-minded. So this Vasudeva is, of course, an extraordinary person, an eternal associate of the Lord. And we're getting some glimpse here into his realizations, and more will unfold as he proceeds with his prayers here, glorifying Lord Krishna. So the verse again, Sri Vasudeva Bhacha, Vritosi Bhavan Sakshat, Purusha Prakrite Para Kevalanu Bhavananda Swaruta Swarupa Sarvabuddhi Drik. I just didn't mention the last three words. Sarvabuddhi Drik means the intelligence of everyone. Or Drik means the seer, Buddhi means intelligence, Sarva of everyone. So it means the super soul. Vasudeva said, my Lord, you are the supreme person beyond material existence, and you are the super soul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the supreme personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly. Any questions or comments?
From what we're understanding, it seems that Vasudeva's relationship is one of on reverence as well as parental, but then you were saying that as soon as Krishna transforms into his baby form, well then that parental sort of overshadows kind of awe and reverence that he had previously. Does that mental continue to grow, the warmth continue to grow in Vasudeva? I mean, is there any switchback, or is it parental from that point on?
I'm trying to remember. We don't hear that much about Vasudeva. I guess we do. Later he'll meet with Narada when Narada comes to Mathura. And of course, after Krishna kills Kamsa, where he expresses some realization of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My first response to what you were saying was, does it grow, his affection? I was like, well, yes. That's the nature of the spiritual world. Nava nava rasa. The rasa, it always increases. Never gets old, never gets stale, always expands. Vraja. The word vraja means to expand, to go out. So our love for Krishna also continuously expands. So there may be some, again, at different times, levels of, some jnana may come in. I was thinking, I didn't look it up, but I was thinking how in the discussion of Lord Chaitanya with Ramananda Rai, where Ramananda is going to higher and higher levels of Krishna consciousness and devotees, I was wondering if Vasudeva and Devaki were given as an example. I'm not sure. Maybe. Because there are different pavas, Mathura, Dwarka, and then Goloka Vrindavan. And then in Goloka Vrindavan, you get higher and higher and higher until you get to the gopis, and finally Mahabhava of Srimati Radharani. So these, in one sense, there are different, there's a hierarchy there. There are different stages of elevation until you get to Srimati Radharani. So Vasudeva is, I don't think he's described as a Jnana Misra Bhakta. I'm pretty sure that's not there. He's a pure Bhakta. But still, we see once in a while some little hint, at least that understanding of Krishna's Supreme Personality comes in, whereas the residents of Vrindavan, that doesn't really, or if it comes, it's just like a little passing momentary thought. Pushkar?
So many times, satsang. Yeah.
Have to be at this platform of purity of Vasudeva in order for Krishna to appear in your heart and for Krishna to for you to perceive Krishna. And that's how he was able to, because he's Vasudeva, but he's the standard.
Yeah.
And it doesn't diminish at any time, because he's constantly, that verse is there, constantly. So and of course, it's always expanding, because Ananda Bhuti wrote it.
Of course, even to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Vasudeva platform. Whether it's a platform of pure affection or not, that's another thing. But Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Sabditam, Pushkar is quoting this verse. Basically, the idea is that from the platform of Vasudeva, Vasudeva means pure Krishna consciousness. And then from that platform, then one gets Krishna. Yes, from Vasudeva comes Vasudeva. Yes, Vasudeva with a short A. That's the father of Krishna, or it means pure Krishna consciousness. And Vasudeva is Krishna. This is all in this whole analogy of how Kamsa killed the six sons of Devaki in the womb. So that represents fear destroying material qualities. And then Balaram enters the womb. So here Balaram represents Vasudeva, or pure Krishna consciousness. So that prepares the consciousness for Krishna to come. So that's the stage. The word Vasudeva also means all-pervasive. Sometimes the impersonalists take that name to be something impersonal. For Vasudeva. Not Vasudeva.
It's interesting in Nityananda Prabhu, Vrindavan Das Thakur's glorifying Nityananda Prabhu, it says that Harai Pandit, that Vasudev, when he came as Harai Pandit, where you can see the moment he was born, same night, where the Komanika, a famous astrologer, he made a chart when Krishna was born. From a materialistic point, it's a very horrible chart, because the child will be born, he will lose his parents. Then he will go to far distance, and then he will lose all his brothers, they all will be killed, and then he will eventually kill his maternal uncle. Then it's like even it's Krishna's chart, but it's very dramatic, how the planetary system made it very fascinating, called Jayanti. Prabhupada called Jayanti in second canto, he put that chart, that this very phenomenal. But there is a good side of it, that he will be the victory Dhanavan after killing the uncle, then he will be the one husband for many girls, millions of girls, and he did 16,000 in Dwarka. And so there was a good side and bad side of that Krishna's appearance. So in that explanation, Sanatana Goswami Pada also gives that the moment Vasudeva left and he came back with the girls and then all the episodes took place, he was going through a very deep affection of Vatsilam. Now here, to see, according to Sanatana Goswami Pad, that verse that Rupa Goswami Pad gives in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kriti Shabda Bhavet Shabda Bhava Shasadana Vida Nitya Siddhasya Bhavasya Prakritam Hridi Shaddata, that every soul has an eternal relationship with Krishna with a particular sentiment. And that sentiment, when it matures in Vishuddha Sattva connection, it will manifest. And then the mood that follows on the basis of that mood is called Anubhava. So, Vasudeva, he is acting as a sadhaka here for us, how to obtain Supreme Lord as a parent. Prabhupada also says later on in the purport, many chapters after. But here, but the eternal position of also Vasudeva also is there, that where for Naimittik Leela, that he is acting as a Harai Pandit, Nityananda Prabhu's father. There, Nityananda Prabhu stayed that long, that many years, that he missed in this Leela. In this Leela, Krishna was there up till 11 and a half, or you can say rounded to 12. So, and Nityananda Prabhu left when he was 12 with that sannyasi, and then Harai Pandit also enjoyed that childhood pastime, but then he went in separation. So this, Mahaprabhu's Leela is called Parishishta. Forgot that English word. Parishishtam is like a completion of all Krishna Leela that began from Saptajuga, Dapurateta, and now Mahaprabhu's Leela. So Vasudev's fulfillment will come to that next lila as Nityananda Prabhu, where he completely gets nourished as a father. But now he has to go through separation for our benefit. But in eternal abode, that famous verse also quoted in Ramananda Sankar, Nanda ki makuro brahmanok sayobi mahodaya, Yashodava mahabhaga papajasya sanam hari. That one who is all-pervasive, who is Atmaram Aptakam, why he is so hungry, thirsty to drink milk or breast milk from Mother Yashoda. So in the commentary is given that Vasudev is nourished by, for our example, he is acting as a sadhaka. But Vasudev is nourished in separation, and this is required for a sadhaka to progress. And then question also comes that the Brahmaji gave blessing to Vasudev and Devaki to be father or parents of the God when Brahma is not God himself. I mean mother, parents of God himself. But how that came, you can say, from the nose of Brahma, but Brahma is never considered by any acharya, including Prabhupada, as a father of Varahadev. So how can he bless Devaki and Vasudev to be parents? So then Sanatana Goswami Pada explaining that because Brahma, like Prabhupada quote, even this morning I heard Prabhupada say that when Hiranyakashipu got this blessing, that Krishna is very kind, he says he's trying to keep the pure devotees' blessing. Not necessarily that Brahma did correct, but even though because he is a pure devotee, so Krishna kept that word. Not that he's qualified, because he's not a parent. How can he give blessing to somebody to become parent of God? But Krishna keeps it up. So for us, our benefit, Vasudev is acting like this. It is again emphasized there that one day Mother Devaki was crying. And so Lord Krishna comes then he says, what's wrong, Mother? Why you are crying? He said, that moment in Kurukshetra that I saw the scenery of you in the lap of Yashoda, I cannot forget. What was that that you are asking, that childhood pastime? What was it? Oh, then why you are crying? You could ask me, I'll show you. So the problem here, this Aisharja is opulence again predominated there. When Lord Krishna, at that time, Vasudev form, took the form of Swayam Bhagavan as a baby Krishna, of Nanda Maharaja's son, Mother Yashoda's son, seeing this, Devaki could not control. Immediately she fell down to pay obeisances. So beautiful, so beautiful. I want to worship instead of taking it as a baby. So it became an object of worship, not as an object of affection. So this is always there.
Other Mohan?
Is this a similar thing like with Arjun when he saw the universal form, all of a sudden his whole mood changed?
Yes.
So whenever Krishna does manifest his godly nature or form, then it kind of like trumps all the rasas for some time that they can.
Of course, the gopis saw Narayana, they didn't know it was Krishna.
Not always, okay. There you go. And then one more. I was thinking of that verse 11.2.42, Bhakti, something Anubhava, Purano, Anubhava. So in there it mentions also Anubhava's direct experience for someone who's taken shelter. So as soon as one takes shelter of Krishna in Bhakti, those three things happen simultaneously, direct perception, devotion, and indifference to everything else. So
Bhakti Parishanu Pava.
On the saying of Gargacharya, this Nandastuatma Jo Narayana Gunasama, that whenever they saw anything amazing in Krishna, they attributed that Gargacharya had said he has qualities Narayana Gunasama, like Narayana, but that he's not Narayana. Whereas in the mood of Dwarka and Mathura, they've actually accepted the Bhava.
line, that's Brahman. Third line.
Which verse?
This verse.
This verse.
Yeah. Because Prabhupada could be Lidda, means he's fully conscious. So then I was thinking that in Vrindavan, when the Dakait came to steal the deities and ornaments, everything, the pujari all left. They were facing the God or not? That's my question. Kalapahar also another example. Bhakti Siddhanta Sagar, so much he taught. Kalapahar came and he just looted South India, all the temples. And all the Brahmana sat down and started praying, but then they ran away. So are they in front of the, like Vasudeva is seeing God. So the deity is not God then? So then Prabhupada put a very simple logic, I call. He said, Vidita means he was fully conscious. So those pujaris who are not conscious, they will not see the God at Vasudeva is seen. Because on the third line is the Bhagavan, Ananda Sarupa, Anubhavananda Sarupa. That's the Bhagavan. And the fourth line also in the purport puts Paramatma. So there's a Brahman on the second line, third line is the Bhagavan, and fourth line is the Paramatma. When somebody understands all three completely, then he's fully conscious the first line, Viditta. Otherwise, he will come and if somebody comes to attack him with the gun, probably he will run away too.
All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.